is breathing so hard? Is it somewhere? It's or who is breathing so hard?
It's
me. So, ¿qué pasa?
Ahí está bien.
Just move it, yeah, a little bit.
Can you hear me properly now?
A ver, no, but breathe. No, but you're breathing with the mouth or with the nose?
I always breathe with the mouth.
Mouth breather.
What can I do?
Okay, but now breathe.
That's not how you breathe.
No, breathe normal.
Oh, no, it's just normal.
Okay, it's fine.
Okay.
All right, guys, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is Hunter. I'm here with Pedro de Ampuero.
Hello, how are you?
Good. And Samuel Munoz.
Hello.
And we've been hunting together all week in Spain. And this was different from any like normal. First of all, this is my first international hunt. I've hunted in Mexico, but this is my first like real international hunt. I really wanted to get a sense of y'all's culture, and I feel like I did. Like I didn't feel like a paid your typical client that you might have, Samuel. Like I felt like I was just like one of the boys hanging out with you guys and had a great time.
Yeah, I agree. Like when you told me that let's do something. There are many things to do in Spain, but
first of all, let's back up because we did a podcast together, and then you asked me or you invited me to come over, and I was like, "Be careful, man! Like, I'll do it."
I regret big time now.
Did you think I was actually going to do it?
Yep. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure. Like, but like when I think I really enjoy it when people come over and they experience the side of our world and how we do things and all that. So I really enjoy showing up.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like.
And you guys took good care of me. And so anyway, you invited me over. I said yes, was able to do it. I'm super glad. We started planning this. I don't know. We started talking about it like last year, I guess. But it wasn't too bad. It was a little easier because I could borrow your rifle. But we can get more into those details and stuff if you want. But then we met. So I just want to mention real quick. So the way it works over here in Spain – I want Samuel can talk on this because Samuel is our professional guide. He works for Casa Planeta.
Yeah, I am Casa Planeta.
Yeah.
It was founded by my grandfather.
Okay.
Then my father carried on with the business and I am working on
the business. So you're third generation.
I am third generation right now, yes.
And are you guys that whole time like on the same hunting grounds more or less?
Yes and no. Every year we rent new hunting areas, but of course I have been hunting in the same area since I was born. So yeah. I know some areas really well.
Okay. And you're 24 years old and you've been
single. He's single.
And a very good boy, ladies. He's a good boy.
Yeah, you're right.
No, we had a great time hunting together, man. So you've been literally running around these spots since you were a kid.
That's right. I started hunting since I was a baby.
Yeah.
I shot my first animal when I was 5 years old, something that it looks crazy nowadays.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And he's humble, but he knows where probably every animal is on every hillside.
Yeah, Dan, you guys are hunting how many days a year?
Well, I think I was speaking with Hunter the other day, and I think last year I hunted over 250 days.
Okay.
More or less.
Yeah, because the season here is all year round, so like it's a long season. Yeah.
Why don't you guys explain to me a little bit about the tags too, because it's totally different in America. Samuel, you were telling me about the other day how the towns get tags, and then go ahead, tell me how you guys do it.
In Spain, there are two systems. You can get tags through the government.
Yeah.
Okay, you can go to a national park, you buy it as a professional guide. You can rent a hunting estate that you rent, you manage, you take care of. And also there are some private areas. So there are a few ways to get tags here in Spain. Of course, local people also hunt animals, but it's not like in America that everyone has the right to shoot animals. In America, I would say, you have more freedom to hunt, and it's easier for the people here. It's more private and more professionalized, the sector.
Okay, we don't have that, the amount of land that you guys have.
Right.
So the amount of people and the pressure that we have, you need to control it.
Yeah.
So there is no way to have public land because the pressure will be so hard
that
there will be no
way
animals
less
left.
Land and more people.
Yeah. That being said, I think like the populations of animals that we have, it's pretty big in general. Like the amount of animals that we have and how things are managed.
Yeah.
We are pretty proud of.
All right. So now we know Samuel a little bit, and we'll talk more to him. But basically, companies like Casa Planeta will work with local governments or people to acquire the tags, and then you guys basically sell them to clients, European, American, whoever, and then so we go. So you guys check out Casa Planeta if you guys are interested in doing. You guys do Ibex. They do everything, Red Stag, Chamois, obviously Roebuck. So, but going back to what you were talking about, why did you decide to – because a lot of people go to Spain to hunt the Ibex. It's big. It's impressive. Just real quick, you were talking about why we decided to do it like this.
Yeah, so I think the Ibex is probably the number one by far animal that we have here in Spain, and it's the most beautiful looking trophies. But I like to see not just the species, and two of my favorite parts of Spain are the Cantabrian Mountains. I love, I think it's one of the most beautiful,
gorgeous
mountain ranges you can hunt on. And at the same time, we love roebuck hunting.
Yeah.
And it's springtime. It's like the best time of the year for doing both. So I think, like, also, it lines up very well with your guys' season.
Yeah.
During the spring, you guys don't have that much. You only have, like, black bears and turkeys. So, like, if you have time, because September is also a great time for Spain, but you guys have the elk, the mule deer in October, this and that, so you guys are pretty busy. But, like, during the springtime, Cantabrian chamois and roebuck, it was the perfect combination between mountain hunting and deer hunting in the forest.
Yeah, we did. You know, we got some diversity. Then we got to do a little bit of cool cultural stuff in between, which was fun. We can jump into that a little bit. So, but starting off, Samuel, tell me a little bit about where you decide to take us to look for chamois.
Why? Or where?
Like, just tell me a little bit about the area, like what it's like or why you decide to go there.
I spoke with Pedro and I have to be honest, here, depending on the client, we can do different experiences. And when I spoke with Pedro, he told me that you were a real hunter, that you wanted to do...
Thanks.
First, you were a real hunter. And that you wanted to do a very wild hunt. So then we decided to sleep in the top of the mountain. I thought that would be a really good option with Pedro. And we decided that we wanted to take you to the highest part of the hunting area. That is really good now also, because now in summertime, the grass is much better in the higher part of the mountain. So that is why we decided you to take to the highest places.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, at the end there is like many different places, many different outfitters, and many different approaches to hunting.
Yeah.
So it's very important to know what people want.
Exactly.
So I know the type of hunting that you do, the type of hunting that you were looking forward to do. So I was like, okay, I know this place, I know the other place. I think this could fit to your style.
Exactly. I mean, we can do very easy hunts too, okay? As you saw, we saw...
Like you could take your dad or your kid on like
a... Exactly. Of course. Yeah. I mean, we can sleep in a very fancy hotel. We can shoot the chamois very close from the car.
Yeah.
You saw that.
Yeah, we saw
plenty
bucks
of...
like 50 meters from our...
Exactly.
Yeah.
But with you, we wanted to do a different experience.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm glad we did. So we came to the... Which, the mountains are gorgeous. They don't look quite like any other mountains I've been in. They're just something a little bit different about them. I don't know about you, but...
Yeah, I mean, like, the Cantabrian mountain ranges start, like, from sea level and picks up, like, elevation really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a mountain with, like, a lot of rocks. So it's, like, in my opinion, it's, like, the most beautiful areas in Spain because you have the typical mountain from a drawing. You have the rock, the little bit of snow... The prayers, then the pine trees and the forest. So
little
just
flowers
like,
and stuff.
And the biodiversity of the Cantabrian Mountains. You have brown bear, you have wolf, you have red stag, wild boar, roe deer.
So everything.
Yeah.
Samoa. So it's just like, I mean, like, it's my favorite place. So.
Yeah. And like a lot of people, I guess, well, American hunters, I feel like we don't typically, at least from my perspective, because I don't live out west, I don't typically see like the high alpine areas like that, like in summer. So it's really cool, like having the wildflowers everywhere, and it's felt like we were in Heidi. The movie.
Plus now it's really good also because the Cantabrian chamois I think it's one of the only subspecies in Europe that we can hunt in summer.
Okay.
Tell me if I am wrong. But yeah, all the other rest of chamois, we are only allowed to hunt in winter time.
That and the Pyrenean, so the ones in Spain.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah.
And they're a super cool little animal, and we were seeing a lot of them, like from the second we got out there. So we spent the night, the first night in the cabin, and then we woke up, and basically the plan was to just kind of go up as high as we could looking for a decent, like, mature, grown animal.
Yeah, that was the plan, and we woke up a little bit tired because we didn't sleep much. I think Samuel was like shouting. Like, I know them well, so I know Samuel.
He knows,
well.
But Hunter didn't know.
So it was like a tiny hut, like, because don't imagine like a super fancy hut. It was like smaller than this room, and we were supposed to all of us sleep in the hut. And I brought my tent and my own mattress to sleep outside because I knew. Yeah. That, I don't know, we were too many people.
I can be nosy.
Samuel loves talking in the, at night.
I didn't want to bring it up. I didn't want to embarrass him. But yeah,
no,
middle
but
of the night.
I'm here to embarrass Samuel. So
in the middle of the night, he's like, we were like,
he was having nightmares of a rat eating his hand, and he was.
But those things only happen to me when I am tired or when I am nervous. And I wasn't nervous. I was pretty tired.
Okay.
So. Yeah, so we had Samuel shouting in the dark, Hunter with jet lag, and I was throwing up in the dark. So
and Roberto was sleeping,
on the table.
Yeah.
Roberto on a table, and I don't know what happened, if it was my kids or something, that I threw up all night, couldn't sleep. So the next morning I woke up and Samuel was like, "You look terrible." Like, thank you.
Yeah,
thank
you were.
Good morning.
Good morning. I hadn't spent much time with you yet, so I didn't like. But like comparing how you look now to then, you were like pretty green, pale looking.
It was terrible because when we shot the chamois, then we arrived to the animal, and Pedro was like, "It's nice." It's like, what the? What's wrong with him?
Yeah, like at some point,
it looks like Hunter's gonna be feeling weird or feeling that he shot a small animal or feeling that he didn't shoot the right animal because Pedro was like, yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, when I watched full the footage of the shot, you're standing there filming it, and I was like, I shoot the animal, and then you're just like, I saw lots of hair.
I was like, are you okay? So, are you okay, Pedro?
Like, imagine not sleeping at all in the tent, end up throwing up like at 4 in the morning, waking up to a full day of hunting without having breakfast or eating anything.
Yeah, and why did you not eat anything?
Yeah, because I didn't I didn't want to bring it out again. So at some point, like when you saw the Samoa, between the heat, the sun, the physical effort all that, I was I reached a moment that is like, I don't give a fuck. I just crashed. I need like an apple. And that apple saved me because I needed like sugar or something. So and especially, you know, like when you have the adrenaline of, because you were shooting, but we are all as a team and I get excited and all that.
Yeah.
But when you get all that adrenaline and you get an animal down, suddenly you are like, relax.
Yeah,
because
but
all the pressure.
Yeah. But I know you and I know the way you act when we kill an animal is his natural it's his natural thing. But he always get very excited. Oh, wow, we kill it. He's always very excited. Yeah. If you have watched his videos, always when he managed to kill an animal or to shoot an animal, he's super excited.
Yeah.
He's over the moon. But he was like, it's nice. Pedro, are you okay? What's wrong? Look, I'm feeling really bad. I don't have any power.
Yeah.
I just need to eat something. I said, okay, yeah, he was white.
Yeah, he was white. That's okay.
I managed to survive the day.
Yeah,
so
he survived. And that was the most hiking we did probably of any other day. But anyway, we get in, we find one that looks good. He's bedded. And, you know, I've never seen a chamois until this day or maybe the night before. So I'm relying on you guys to kind of tell me, you know, like, is this like a decent one or not? And so I'm kind of like unsure in the video. I'm like, should I do it like, are we good here? And you guys are like, he's good. And so, and it was just too, it was, you know, it was early, it was the first day, it was like before noon, I think, but it was just like the perfect opportunity. It was a good animal, like the lighting, the cameras were good, everything was just nice. So it was just like, let's roll with it, you know.
Yeah, I think we have experience also like documenting hunts, so like if a really good opportunity yeah. appears. I think it was stupid not taking Plus, it because it was a great Samoa.
Yeah.
We were on a great distance. We were set up. The cameras were rolling. He was broadside. Great
it
light.
Was perfect, yeah.
So he had a lot of things. We could have done better trophy-wise. Maybe.
Yeah,
or maybe not.
Yeah.
But also, like, getting that content
is
not easy because we are four guys. We have
Plus, it wasn't the first Chamois that we saw on the day.
No, it wasn't.
We passed plenty of them. We saw another Chamois really nice, but it was young that we didn't want to shoot. Yeah. We saw another one very nice next to the cabin that we didn't want to shoot. And the week before I did the sample scouting, I spot two Chamois that were bigger. But you might see them and you might not see them, like Pedro said. So I think it was the perfect opportunity, the perfect shot, the Chamois standing in the top of the rock.
Yeah.
Boom, perfect.
Yeah, it was picture perfect. Yeah, so. And then it gave us a time to like enjoy the rest of the afternoon, hang out, we went back to town that night. And then we had time to do some other stuff. But so we basically just packed that out. And what did we do that night? Did we head into town that night? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think so, because we arrived kind of late, like when the sun was getting dark, I think, more or less.
Yeah.
Right for dinner.
Oh, that's at your house that we went to.
Yeah. We had a small dinner, right?
Yeah, also Hunter lost his Chamois on the way.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Tell him about that.
That's right.
You got to tell him about that.
Yeah, so we got the Chamois. Took one of the best naps ever. By then, I was starting feeling better after a few.
Everything's still kind of a blur to me because I was like so jet lagged and just out of it.
No, the shot like the Samoa was on a perfect spot. We waited for like how much, like like an hour to the buck to stand up.
Yeah,
we didn't want to rush it because some of these animals, like they will be bedded down. You start making noises and suddenly they just jump and run.
Yep.
Because they are bedded. So we decided to wait. Stood up, perfect. Everyone confirmed and Hunter make a perfect shot, which was a great relief because when someone borrows your rifle, it's always like, they're going to blame me. If something goes wrong, it's going to be the rifle.
Well, we did check it the night before too.
Shot was money. And we pack everything. We pack the meat. The good thing about Chamois is that they are only also like 45, 50 pounds.
Yeah,
so
I had the whole animal. It was about as much as like a big mule deer quarter. Like the entire
animal. Deboned it, so it was like nothing.
Yeah.
And we pack it out. And with your backpack, Hunter couldn't manage to put the head of the Chamois properly on the backpack to kind of like make it.
Steady-wise,
looking good, you know, like he was hanging. So he was so worried about losing the trophy that every 10 minutes he would look back to me. It's like, Pedro, is he still there? Like, yes, Hunter, he's still there. 10 minutes later, he was like, he's still there? Like, yeah, he's still there. And after the fifth time he told me that, I was like, hey, Roberto, listen to me. I'm going to steal Hunter's someone. He's not going to have a clue. So I told Samuel, on the next reach, yes, fake that you see a fox or something and when there's like the confusion of like there's a fox, just I'll grab Hunter by the backpack and just poof, take out the head. And we took the head out. He didn't have a clue. We filmed everything and
he didn't notice anything at all
for like 2 miles.
And I told someone like let's film the him not,
and he said
and we
hey,
stopped several
yeah,
times
he said we're gonna stop on the next flat area and let's sit down for a little bit, let's have a rest and let's see what he says.
And I was sure that he was going to drop the backpack, like where
and
is my Chamois?
And see
like,
it.
No,
he said, nah, okay, let's carry on.
At this point,
and we, I don't know, at some point he looked at us, he's like, hey guys, I lost the Chamois. And Samuel and I were like,
nah.
You're joking. And he was full in.
Completely like freaking out, like because we had gone like 2 miles.
Yeah, because we were like, let's review the footage, Roberto. Where was the last time? And we review the footage, like this was a long time ago.
Yeah,
like, we're never gonna find that head again.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been impossible to find. And the tag is on the thing's head, too. So I'm thinking, like, oh, Samuel's gonna be screwed, like legally, because he doesn't have a tag. Or whatever. I didn't know. I was freaking out, man. And I did not want to go back. And I did not think there was any chance we'd find it.
You were lucky that we didn't even thought about the legal thing, because if not, it would have been way worse. Because
no, we were okay.
You guys got me good.
At one point, we stopped and I said, "Hey, but it's over." I started laughing, so I was like, "Stop!"
You would have just kept going with it, huh?
No, not because you were being nice. Because you were being nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. We could see your face, and we were like, he looks like a little kid. Come on, let's just stop.
I didn't want to walk back, so we were like, okay, let's go.
Because, I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, that little piece of bone, that's irreplaceable. You know, that's kind of your tangible memory of the hunt. So that sucks if you lose it.
Yeah, but, yeah, we didn't lose it. We were back on the town, have a good night's sleep, and the next day we had to cross kind of like half of Spain, so we were on the western part, we had to go to the eastern part.
Long day.
And we had to cross kind of like through Madrid, which is the capital of Spain, and it's right in the middle. And it turns out that this month is like the Madrid town, how do you say, like town
festival
or whatever, and there is like bullfighting.
Yeah. So it's like the fair. It's like the town fair.
Yeah.
It lasts for like 20 days, something like that. Yeah.
And, so and not just Madrid, but like all over Spain, different towns are doing it. Because we came up on like a random little small town bullfighting.
Yeah, exactly.
Thing,
but every single village or town has a different date for it.
Yeah. But Madrid is the most important one. It's a huge, like, awesome
for the bullfighting,
arena.
Yes. And for the, all the events. Because at the end of the day, it's the capital of Spain.
Sure.
And that's it.
But before that, we went and had some paella.
Oh, my God.
Well, paella. Paella.
Paella. According to some Spaniards, it's not true paella.
It's rice with meat. By the way, it was delicious. Very nice. But it's not paella.
It was delicious.
Yeah, so paella, it's a typical dish from Spain that it's rice with typically seafood.
And a big, like,
yeah, it's
giant
like a
plate.
Big. Yeah. Typically, it's from seafood, and the area of Spain that invented the paella, they are very proud. It's like it's only with seafood. But we like at home doing
it. By the way, we are in the paella area now, very close by.
Okay.
But we haven't got paella. We have been in a Chinese.
No, but paella is typical in different areas of Spain.
Yeah.
But in every single area, they make it different.
Yeah, okay.
So many areas in the south, in the north, they say, we have really good paella. That's right. But every paella is kind of different.
Yeah.
Except in Valencia, where they make it very traditional.
Okay. Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah, we took a...
Whatever we ate, it was good.
Yeah, it was great.
And then we went to the big bullfight, which was an experience. It was really cool. Like, first of all, the arena is, like, basically unchanged of what it would probably have been like in Roman times or something. I mean, it's like the stone
the seats
seating
are made of out of a stone.
Yeah,
so
the whole
it's
thing
not
is like, tradition.
Yeah, it's not like I mean, like we are in 2024, so they could have easily put like plastic seats for everyone to sit more comfortable. But I think bullfighting, it's all about tradition.
Yeah,
so
tradition.
Like the seats are.
It's cool.
Made out of a stone, all of them.
There's no like announcer over an electric loudspeaker, nothing like
it's
that.
It's not American rodeo at all.
It's an art. It's we say that it's an art.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a tradition too, but it's something that has a lot of value for many of us. Of course, it's something that many people are against too. But many other people like me or Pedro, we really like bullfighting, and for us, it's our main tradition.
Yeah, yeah, I can see after actually going to it and experiencing it, I can see what you mean when you say it's an art, because it really is. I mean, the performance, of course, it's like bravery, but it's more like it's a dance with that bull, and it's a whole like procedure. And I don't know.
Yeah, I do have mixed feelings. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't like seeing the bull suffer. Like, it's something that it's hard for me because my whole life has been trying to do the opposite. But at the same time, it's a I don't know how to
a
say
brave, it. A brave way to die.
No, it's...
It's like, a respectful way to die, right? That's
proving, like, how brave a bull is, how brave the bullfighter is, because, like, those bulls are no joke. Like, even from the arena, they look big, but when we stopped by and we saw one at sea level, at sea level,
and
like
that level, and know, that like one, that one was smaller. The one we saw very close
was much smaller.
Was smaller than the one that
I'd mentioned this to you guys the way I saw it, which is something you guys are kind of touching on, which is that these cows, like cows, are bred to die for human consumption. That's at the end of the day, almost every, unless you're in India, the cow is eventually going to die. It's going to be eaten and turned into shoes or whatever.
That's right.
This, like you said, is a celebration kind of their bravery. And it's not done on like an industrial scale. It's like a few bulls and, you know, yes, they die, but it's like you said, it could be this or like a bullet to the head behind the barn. Like this is like almost that they can go out fighting. It's like an honorable way to go. It's a celebration of their bravery.
Well, bullfighting is like Pedro comes from the north, but I come from the south of Spain. Where I live, we have plenty of bulls and cow for bullfighting. Yeah. We have that breed. But the thing is that they live in open areas. They live in really good conditions. It's not like industrial farming that the cows and the bulls live in one square meter.
Yeah.
No, here they live in a free area, feeding, resting, breathing. And the thing is that it's too expensive to breed this animal if it's not for bullfighting. Because the meat is good, but... It's too expensive.
It's not a meat cow.
Exactly. Right. It's not a meat cow.
It's made
cow.
For a purpose. Yeah.
Exactly. It's made for this purpose.
Yeah. And yeah. Anyway, I thought it was really cool. I enjoyed it. I think there's a lot of parallels in there to hunting, just culturally and stuff. But and you guys were also explaining to me, it's in the same way that hunting, from an outsider's perspective, can be boiled down to, oh, you just like that moment of killing. You like killing the animal. It's not. It's kind of like this trip. It's been an experience. Yes, we killed some animals. That was a big part of it. That was the reason for it. But that's just part of a much bigger experience. And like Roberto was telling to me, like, it's about what you do before you go to the bullfight and hang out with friends and family or whatever, sharing drinks. It's a social event. The smell of the arena, you know, the cigar smell you're talking about, the whole thing.
That's what I like.
It's a cultural, social thing. And
yeah, and also imagine the experience of the bullfighter.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are just watching, but like risking your life to fight face to face with just a sword, because they kill it with a sword.
Yeah.
Which for me, it seems like impossible. Like imagine if they give you a sword and like you need to kill that elk with that.
Yeah.
Even and if it charges like or a buffalo.
And you cannot kill it anywhere. You have to kill it in a specific place.
It's very specific, yeah.
So it is very difficult.
Sword in from the top.
You're risking your life. You can die any moment. So you know when you go into the arena, but you don't know if you're coming out.
Yeah.
So that's something we must respect. There is someone risking his life for the audience.
That's no, and like I told you, like some bullfighters get really serious injuries and some die.
Yeah.
Because like the tips are sharp, so like they will cross your whole leg like in an instant. So like completely through. Like,
you guys
so, like,
showed me some videos of, like, of you know, some like, bullfights gone bad. Yeah,
going, and sometimes they even die between there, and there is a surgery in their own arena with blood and everything, and they
don't make it. Yeah, it's a crazy. I don't want to call it a sport. I guess it's a sport experience.
I don't know. It's like hunting. How would you define hunting?
Exactly.
It's more than a sport. It's more than art. It's what we have been doing for our whole life. So it involves art, a craft,
tradition,
a sport, tradition. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. There are a lot of parallels there to hunting. But anyway, yeah, just like don't knock it before you try it. You know, if you think you don't like it, go see one sometime and see. I mean, I think it might change your mind. But anyway,
yeah, so I think it was for you like worth it while we were here.
Oh, so cool! Yeah, everybody gets dressed up.
But it's good now. Now you can give your own opinion. But I think it's important to go to see it with your own eyes and then decide if you like it or not.
Yeah.
And also, I think it is important to go with someone that can explain you the whole process. Because if you go without knowing anything, you're like, what is this?
Yeah. Yeah, just being here this whole week with you guys has been cool. Because, you know, typically when you go overseas, you might just kind of fall into the typical traps of a tourist because you are. But it's cool when you, like, have a friends over here. So, So anyway, after that, that's when we so right after the bullfight, we headed straight to the hunting area. That was a long day.
Yeah, like it was a way, like roebuck hunting in June, sleeping is not the thing. Like you sleep like typically 5 hours.
Days are super long.
So we started already by sleeping 2 hours and a half the first day.
Yeah, 2 hours and a half, 3 hours.
Yeah, because we arrived here at 2:30 or something, and at 4:30 we were already up and moving. So,
but I have learned two things you don't ever have to worry about when hanging out with Spaniards. You will be well fed and you will be well rested. At some point, rested, you're going to get a nap and some good food at some point.
Yeah, I don't know if well rested.
Well rested. It depends on the hand.
We took some 4 hour siestas.
Your hand has been very successful. Yeah. So that is one of the reasons why you have rest very well. But it depends on the situation. I can't tell you.
Yeah, no.
Samuel, every time I come here with a bow and we get together a bow hunt, resting is not a thing.
No.
Like after 6 days, he's like, this is not worth it for me. Just like, you need to leave.
It's not worth it. It's not worth it. I mean, I have photos that I can show you. I think 2 years ago, hunting with Pedro for 15 days. Yeah. I lost, I don't know how many in pounds, in kilos. It's like 8 kilos.
So 16 pounds.
16 pounds. You could see me. When I arrived home, my mom was like, son, what's happened? Are you okay?
Yeah, we did a red deer tour, and we hunted in a couple of places with Samuel. But actually, the whole red deer tour was 23 days nonstop, hunting every single day.
Jeez.
So at the end of the thing, we were like,
yeah.
So you have been lucky.
Yeah, well, no, I didn't. So we did get very little sleep every night. But in the middle of the day, the bucks are bedded down. So we always would come back, have a nice lunch, and at least a couple hour nap. So that was good.
Yeah, especially now in June. Like, it's typically warm, although Hunter has been the luckiest person ever. We haven't got rain here in 2 years, so I don't know, like in a long time. Yeah. And typically it's super warm, super hot. So, like, animals don't move during the middle of the day.
It has been very dry.
Hunter arrived and the clouds came, chill weather, some little bit of rain.
Like, it was raining when I shot my buck, and it was pretty much raining when it was basically raining when you shot your buck.
Yeah, it was like foggy and rainy, so like the perfect deer hunting conditions. Like, I don't know in the States, but like here, when you have like a storm, everything gets wet, and suddenly the sun comes out, all the deer will start moving, trying to dry out, trying to get the sun, trying to eat. Like, we were super lucky because actually on the roe deer side of the thing, of the hunt, that part, we were a bit concerned.
Yeah, yeah. Because like, this is apparently the most challenging time of the year to hunt.
It's the worst time of the year to hunt roebuck.
Yeah.
Roebuck, because the does are having the little ones, the males are not with the females.
Yeah.
There is a lot of food inside the forest.
Actually, there's more food inside the forest this time of the year than outside.
Plus, the cereals are very high.
Yeah.
So it is.
The grain. Yeah, the grain in the fields. Yeah, so they were a little bit like, okay, we got the chamois, but Hunter, might be a little harder to get the roebuck. But we had some good weather, but okay, so.
I don't know even what happened. I think like what we did to start off hunting roebucks, we did a little bit more of like checking a lot of different locations to try to get a quick idea of what was moving around this time of the year, because between April and now, like things have changed a bit, and roebucks are territorial, but it's like, we have not that much time. We need to try to control.
Yeah. Get to an area, glass it, see what's there. If there's nothing there, move to another area, walk in, glass it, and kind of hit lots of stuff in the morning while you can.
So it was a bit different to what I do back home.
Yeah.
Because we go every week. We go hunting. So by June, we know, I mean, like by May, we already know every single roebuck in the area.
Yeah.
So we are like, okay, we're going to target this buck. So we'll park the car and start walking, and you hunt one particular buck.
Yeah.
But here was like, we need to get to advantage point, glass for half an hour.
I mean, we don't see anything. I have done a lot of pre-scouting, but these areas are very big. So we have bigger areas. So I would say roebuck move a little bit more.
Yeah.
So of course, we have been trying to check several roebuck that I already spot in April, But if you don't see them, you cannot lose all your day just trying to spot an animal, because you don't have so much time. It's not like Pedro that can go every weekend.
Right.
With you, it's like we have to shoot it in 3 days.
Yeah.
So we have to try to cover as much ground as possible.
Sure. And I just wanted to mention, too, I forgot to mention, we've been talking about a lot how – so Roebuck is kind of the – I don't know how you say it, but it's – I don't want to say it's the equivalent of the whitetail in America, but culturally it's kind of concurrent. Like the species that most Spanish young men start hunting, besides wild boar, is roebuck. And – like, yeah. It's just kind of like, I guess when you get into some of the bigger mountain species, that's more like, I guess, more advanced hunters, or I don't know, more well-to-do hunters or something. But the roebuck is kind of like the classic Spanish hunting species to start. Like, would you say?
So depending on the area, but what I would say is like in Europe, roebuck will be the stalker's school.
Yeah.
You find roebucks in every country in Europe, all the way to Scotland, the UK, Ireland, like Spain, yeah. France, Germany, like
it's the deer of Europe.
Hungary, like all over. Yeah. And it actually goes all the way to Russia. So there is roebucks everywhere. Yeah. The population of roebucks is big in many areas.
So most Americans, your ancestors, were hunting roebucks.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah.
And it's an animal that the season is kind of opposite to other animals. So the whole spring, the only animal that have antlers because of their process on it's the roebucks. So it's actually what we all hunt during the spring.
Yeah.
And since there is good density, it's kind of not I'm not sure if affordable is the right way, but it's easy to find access to roebucks.
Yeah.
Because they
it's the most accessible European game species, probably.
So, So I would say that
red
it's kind
stags,
of...
I would say red deer.
Yeah, but red deer, like the roebuck? the trophies are way more expensive. Like in France, in Germany, in all those, like the red deer, I would say that they're one step higher. You have to think of that.
Well,
red
big,
deer,
big roebuck.
Yeah, but
are
like,
expensive too.
Yeah, but
they're
like,
really big ones.
I think the biggest difference is that the red stag, to have a mature trophy, you need 8 years.
Yeah.
A roebuck with 3 years, it's already a big trophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, the cycle.
Are the red
faster.
Stag about the same price wise as the ibex, or are they?
No.
Less.
No. You're talking about red stag, right?
Yeah.
Red stag are cheaper than ibex.
Okay, just curious. So yeah, you guys, I don't know if we want to get into it or not, but the trophy like scoring system is kind of interesting too. There's representative, bronze, silver, and gold medal, and that's the classification of the age or I guess antler score.
Yeah, so it's the measuring system. It's a little bit more complicated, I would say, than just the SCI measurement, that is just like the length of the tines and the diameter of the bases.
Yeah.
Here there is a lot of like beauty scores of like how wide it is.
It's like
our Boone
and Crockett.
Yeah, that is like way more
similar. It's quite similar. Also, for the roebuck, it's very important the weight.
Yeah.
I was explaining to you before. For example, your roebuck, his head was very big. And Pedro, where he hunts his roebucks, they are smaller.
Yeah.
The body, the head. So then that makes a big difference too.
Yeah.
So you can have the same roebuck with a different skull, and then one will be much bigger than the other one.
Yeah.
I do think that the whole deer system of scoring, I don't like it, because at the end, what you are measuring is volume of antler, and the deer in general, all deer species, will have the highest scoring point at their prime.
Yeah,
when they are at their prime, when they are in the moment that breeding will be the best, when they are the strongest, the healthiest, that's when they will score the most.
They'll be gold.
So at the end, you are targeting the animals that you shouldn't be hunting.
As opposed to what we did with your buck, was find the oldest, gnarliest, regressed buck.
Which is regressed. It has less points, but it's true that deer species is very hard to count the age on the scoring system because it's very hard. It's not like, but I think like the scoring system of the ibex, the samoa, and all that is way better, because the older the animal gets, the more age rings
it's
gonna have.
Even if it regresses.
No, it never regresses. It always gets bigger.
Yeah.
So but the older
breaks off or something.
The older it gets, it's better.
That's right. But also, there is something that I like from these systems is what we were talking about the other day. It's about the score, the Spanish systems and the European systems for scoring is really good for conservation. I know it's quite difficult to explain, but as I was explaining to you the other day, it's really important. I know I am with Pedro. I think it's too strict, and I think that we should give more value to other animals, which is difficult, for example, with roback. How can you do it?
No, but with chamois, our scoring system of chamois will give points to the age.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of value.
And so ibex, I think just the roback one is off.
And ibex too.
The whole deer, yeah. And ibex. Yeah. The ibex, the older they get, it has a specific points. Right. Yeah. Points for age. Sure. So no matter about the length, but like it will give you extra points for age. So
that's very important. What we were talking the other day, is important in order to conserve and to have bigger animals. I think that's something really that I really like from Europe and from Spain that you don't have in America.
Yeah.
Because in America you go and you shoot a mountain goat or whatever and you pay for the tag. You don't pay for the trophy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like at the end, I think there is two ways of doing management of areas. You can either shoot really old animals and really young and just trying to keep the age class in the middle, mm-hmm. the best ones. That's very typical what they do in Germany. So they will shoot only animals that are on regression.
Yeah.
And all the younger ones will be the ones that are like too short, too thin. They don't look, they look like management.
Yeah.
And trying to keep the best genetics. And also there is the other model that is you shoot a little bit of everything. And from the whole pyramid of age and that, you are taking a little bit of everything so it keeps balance.
But this depends on the animal.
Yeah.
Right now, Pedro is talking about roe deer, right? So this.
No, but I think the red stag in general is the same.
Well, and red stag too.
Yeah, so for deer species.
For deer species, yeah.
For deer species.
Okay. Yeah, it's really interesting. So the goal for me, for us, for me first, was to get a good representative, or I was hoping to get like at least bronze just because I could get one of those cool medals maybe. And but anyway, the first spot you took me to, you said there was a gold medal in there, but he wasn't there that morning.
Which one? Ah, okay, yes. Well, we tried to see it, but it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Again, right now, many of the roback are inside the forest and they don't come out.
Yeah.
So
we spent the whole first day looking for bucks. We saw a couple decent ones, but nothing that got them excited. So
you can really tell when we get excited. You can really tell when you're excited.
Oh yeah.
We start fighting for the spotting scope. You're like, yeah, I saw a roback, and I start putting the spotting scope. Like, no, let me watch it. No, just, and we are like, fighting for the spotting scope.
Give me the scope. Give me the scope.
And Samuel is like, no, tell me what it is. I'm not going to tell you where it is until you give me the spotting scope.
And you guys did a good job of trying to translate stuff to keep me like informed. But it was also really funny, like all week, just observing you guys interact and like not knowing what you're saying. I can only go off of like your body language and like how you're saying stuff. So the whole week I'm just like trying to figure out what you guys are talking about and just like cracking up. You guys are so funny.
Sorry for not speaking English.
No, you guys did good. Like it's hard to you did good, but when you weren't, it was just funny. Like trying to figure out. Like I love you guys' like dynamic. So I had a great time hanging out with you guys. But anyway,
we hate and we love each other.
Yeah, you guys have like a big little brother kind of relationship going on. It's hilarious.
No, yeah, I met actually Samuel the first time on the. Like right below where you saw your chamois.
Yeah.
That day, and he was 14.
He was 14. That's the day he ate all your sandwiches, right?
Yeah, and all the water.
And drank all the water.
All the water, and we end up drinking water from the ice and throwing up all of us.
Oh my God, I was dying that week.
Yeah, but it was your fault, so I don't feel bad. But the fact is that he was 14 and he has learned most of his things from
13, 14. I don't even know if I was 14.
Yeah, so
14.
So you guys have known each other.
You have learned a lot from me.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to keep you.
It has been a while. It has been a while.
Oh man, well, it was fun hanging out with you guys. But then, okay, so the second day, we saw one in the morning that got you guys excited, and so he was kind of like off. He was probably 600 meters away across the canyon, and so we basically, once we kind of confirmed he was a good buck, me, you, and Roberto dropped down. And then we were able to climb back up the other side, and it was perfect. We had, like, what do you guys call those, like, terraces, the wall, like rock walls. Yeah. That one might have been a natural one, though, actually.
Yeah, I think that was one.
Yeah, it was like a little like rock bluff, but like it was tall enough where we could stand up and like take packs off and get stuff ready and then just ease up the top. And we spotted him bedded, what, like 200 yards and just waited for him to stand up. And
yeah, as soon as we...
what's that cheese-eating grin?
As soon as we spotted the bug, we have hunted together enough to know that the biggest mistake is losing sight of the animal.
Yeah.
Like, actually, when you stalk animals, sometimes, like, we try to hide ourselves too much, and it's better to actually don't lose sight, and when the buck is just, like, distracted, get closer, rather than hiding too much, because the moment you lose sight of the animal, you are in trouble, because you don't know if the animal is looking at you, if he heard something. If you are in open terrain, just walking closer, and you see the animal, like, he feels something, you can stop, you can wait.
Yeah.
So that's why when we spotted that bug, it's like, Samuel, you need to sit down here, get to the highest advantage point as fast as possible while we drop, just in case we lose sight of it.
We always try to get a point where we can cover as much ground as possible just in case the animal moves.
Yeah.
So we can say, hey, is there, is there. So that's one of the reasons why I stay in the other side of the valley, checking and watching the animal. And it was a good idea because the animal, the roadback moved like 200-300 meters from where we saw it.
He was bedded. It would have been hard to spot him.
Yeah.
It would be hard.
So, but with your help, we did. I'm trying to move it along a little bit because I want to get to everything. I know we got to be out of here pretty soon. But so, yeah, it was perfect. I got set up. He was 200 yards, started raining a little bit. We waited about, what, 30, 45 minutes before he stood up?
I think it was more like 50.
50, was it? Yeah. Okay. Close to an hour, I guess, then. Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to slightly make him to stand up, but when the rollbacks don't want to stand up, is you can't force it because it's like the hares and all that, those tiny animals that they look at you, they look at you, they don't move, and when they freak out, they start running. So you have high chances of the buck not standing up and giving you a shot.
Yeah.
That's right.
So but you did great. Like you hold tight.
Yeah.
Bedded under the rain, waiting, getting set up. So
we thought rifle hunting was very easy, right?
I was gonna get to that.
Am I right or wrong? I don't know. Eh?
Yeah, Pedro was saying rifle hunting is very easy, but so the thing stands up, and I'm
gonna have so many haters now.
we're getting there. It's perfect on the video. You can see him chewing his cud, and then he starts licking his lips, and then he gets up, and then pretty perfect shot.
Yeah, it was
boom on the spot.
It was my rifle. So
both of my shots, I got to say, both of my shots were pretty on point. Don't you think so?
No, they were perfect, both of them.
Yeah.
Like, I have been teaching that rifle for a few years now, so he kills by its own. So.
Okay, what happens when you start shooting it?
We have a tough relationship.
So anyway, beautiful.
Yeah, and it was like typical, most traditional.
Yeah, the ideal shape of the antlers.
So it's like 6-point, wide, nice, thick, beautiful,
like mature your typical bug. Like 8-point, like to his ears, white tail.
And also like the setup was great because we were able to sneak. The bug was bedded. Yeah. Lay out the cameras, bed down,
sometimes,
have a solid rest.
Sometimes it's not about the trophy. Sometimes it's about the situation,
yeah.
The spot. It was perfect. Mm-hmm. I think it was ideal. The stalk, you made a perfect stalk. So then at that moment before shooting, I spot another 2 bucks that I told Pedro, I'm checking another 2. Okay, and I spot one that it was the same size or probably a little bit bigger. But then me and Pedro, we both decide, look, it's not worth it. We are in a really good position to shoot this buck. Let's kill this one.
Better a bird in hand than
1,000. Yeah, that's right.
No, and like and the setup was perfect. That one of my biggest concerns was capturing the moment properly.
Yeah.
And typically roebucks, they are always, you shoot them either walking towards the forest at very low light.
Yeah.
You don't have time to set up. So that was completely the opposite. We have the whole time in the world.
Both
great
the animals
light.
I shot were like that.
Yeah.
Just
like waiting for an hour, prone position, 200 yards, which is a great distance because these animals, like the chest is like 10 inches. So like you need, they are tiny.
Yeah, you have to put the bullets inside something like this. Nothing.
Yeah. If you're watching, I'm checking to make sure we're still rolling and checking the battery. That's why I keep leaning over like that.
Yeah, he told me to do that, but he doesn't trust
I don't trust Pedro. It's that paranoid thing, man. I've had too many great conversations. Well, I've lost a couple. Anyway. So, yeah. And then plus, we wanted to find a cool buck for you as well. So
no,
this,
like
this gave us some time, and it was perfect situation. I mean...
And you never know. You could have missed the shot. The buck could have run away, but so... Yep. Like
in hunting, everything can happen.
Yep.
And sure. How many other bucks that size we have seen the whole week?
Yeah. Good point.
None. That was the biggest.
Yeah.
So it's like no, it's not that we regret. It's like we saw.
No, it's perfect. Yeah,
well, we hunt for 2 days only. That's right. We could have carried on, but I think that it was a perfect buck for you. Perfect shape, everything perfect. So I think it was ideal. Sometimes, as we said, it's not about the trophy side. It's that it was the perfect big animal, perfect, nice.
Are you happy?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah,
so that's it.
Yeah, that's he's a great buck. Yep. So we got up. You guys and I found out you guys are like you guys take your trophy pictures to the next level of professionalism.
I don't know. We have we have Samuel's.
Is that this?
Samuel, mobile phone.
Although trophy. I got to say, Samuel takes some pretty good photos.
Yeah, but he's with the mobile phone thing and we are with the big cameras.
Yeah. And then I brought along one of those disposable cameras just for fun. So to get some snaps. So we had like mobile phone, disposable.
I like Pedro's photos because he really respects the animals in all his photos. It's something I have to say. It's not because he's here. But I take the photos in a different way because in all my photos, I respect the animal. I try to take a clean photo showing the respect to the animal. But of course, also, I try to focus on the trophy.
Sure.
Pedro focused 100% on the animal, on the... The shape,
on the
everything,
feeling.
On the feeling. Yeah, it's a different way of taking photos. So that's why. That's one of the reasons why we fight a lot.
Because your trophy photo styles.
We have different styles, but
yeah,
mixing both of them is perfect. The perfect combination, right?
Yeah,
yeah. But we got some cool shots. The video.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's it not is. That we filmed it, but it was like
I want to get you to like translate like what you guys are saying in the background for me. I mean, that's hilarious.
Do you and Roberto or do you and me?
Yeah, I don't know. We talk so much, so many things that I don't know. He's going to need a translator to... You're going to need to send me the footage just in case we say something inappropriate.
Yeah, probably
Spanish,
should. Yeah. I'll send you a rough cut, but
We got that buck, and we still had a couple more days left to hunt, and I wanted also to try some luck. So
yeah, I'm glad we did. So yeah, we switched positions at that point. You took over the rifle, and did you? Okay, so the buck we went to go hunt. Did you guys know about him before and decide that's kind of the one you wanted to go for?
Pedro's.
Yeah.
Manolete.
Manolete. Yeah, we spotted in April. Well, I didn't spot him.
Manolo
but
did.
One of my main guys, Manolo, that he's not here, but he always comes with me.
And he's a good friend of mine. Like, I've hunted with him like a bunch of times.
He's so one of your gamekeepers?
Yeah.
No,
he's a hunting guy. Really good. He's like my father. He has been guiding for us since I am very little.
Yeah.
So I have learned a lot from him too. And... is the one who spotted that animal.
Okay.
He spotted that buck and he told me, Samuel, there is a very, very old buck there. We have to shoot it. I don't know if he's even dead. He told me. He told Pedro, he's so old that I don't even know if the buck is still alive. So then that is why we focused.
Did he know his leg was broken already when he saw it?
No. When he saw it, he told me that when he saw the buck inside the forest.
So maybe also, he didn't notice that because the broken leg, I think it was not fresh.
Yeah. And this thing, like a typical old buck, was living in like thick, deep kind of... He wasn't just like out in the field like chilling. No. Like he was in some thick, nasty stuff. It was almost like coos deer hunting a little bit.
Yeah, like it reminded me a little bit to that. And one of the things that I think it's like on every species, like we have grown up, I hunted my first roebuck when I was 7. So it's like I have hunted roebucks all my life. I have, I don't know, many roebucks because we hunt a bunch every season because it's not like the government give you one tag. Like we are lucky and we have access to shoot quite a few every season. So after hunting a lot of them, we are not looking that much for the perfect, beautiful animal that is kind of like one more.
Yeah.
But something that it's different.
Yeah.
That it's either old or mean or
we look like for a roebuck with character.
Yeah.
That's what we were looking for. And Pedro told me, I don't want to shoot him a very big buck, but that is still on his prime.
Yeah.
I want to shoot a very old buck or something with character. Yeah. So I say, hey, this is the buck.
We have the
Manolete,
right
buck for you. Manolete is the buck.
And it's good for you, too, because your typical client doesn't want an old, regressed,
jacked up
deer.
Of course, because
there were several clients that actually refused to shoot that
buck. One of the clients, he told my guide, I don't want to shoot it.
Yeah.
It's cool, but I want to shoot something very big.
Yeah.
I mean, for us, this trophy is worth it a lot more than a big, big trophy, right?
Yeah.
And it was on a, like, roebucks are very territorial. So, like, he was living on a tiny area.
Yeah, about 20 to 25 acres.
But it was like
area.
Like a mountain.
Yeah.
That had, one of the side was full oak trees. The other side were terraces with bushes, and the other side was like open press.
Yeah. So and then there was a creek at the bottom with some farmland.
Yeah. So like he was like on a very specific terrain.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't make sense for him, especially with his condition. Like a really old buck with a fully broken leg that he was like completely broken.
Yeah. Couldn't even put weight on it.
Yeah. Like he had like the whole elbow was broken up here.
Shoulder. Yeah.
No,
was it the shoulder or the elbow?
No, because the elbow is the feet. The feet are, half of the leg is the feet.
Yeah.
So it's the elbow.
Okay.
And then you have the shoulder up here with the scapula.
Yeah. I thought that was messed up, but it was here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, I don't know, whatever. It was in between. But yeah.
It was messed up.
It must, yeah. So it was.
He had one toe.
I think because the feet was broken, right?
No? I'm pretty sure that here there is a lot of fences, and I'm pretty sure that is the typical in Europe, a buck that gets inside a fence, start twisting,
broke and like to get out.
Broke the one of the fingers because of the fence, and with one of those twists probably broke the bone, but didn't have an injury of like a shot, of like an impact that got into the vitals.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was in bad shape, also it's not the typical bike that will try to go to other territories.
Right,
was like on his spot.
He's in his spot. He's
don't
not
mess
going
around.
Anywhere.
Move around. Yeah. I know my few spots. I have been living here for 10 years or whatever, and I have been doing fine. But as soon as we analyze the area, somewhere and I, we all look at each other like, he's in trouble. It's we're gonna. It's a tiny area.
Well, I was scared because I didn't know if the roebuck was there. But the one we spot the roebuck, I knew. I knew it was dead.
Yeah, I had the feeling too. I was like, because again, I'm not faulting you guys, but like you guys are talking a lot. I can tell you're planning, talking about stuff a lot. I get probably 15% of it, 10% maybe. So, but I knew eventually I figured out that Pedro had, you know, set his sight on this buck and we knew where it lived and like it's, we're not going to get off this thing till it's dead.
Yeah, and I love hunting a particular animal.
Yeah.
Rather than walking
around.
Which was
cool to watch.
It's like, okay, because it's like solving a puzzle. It's like, we're not going to just walk to try to look for a roebuck. We're going to solve the puzzle, try to figure out where he lives, and in 2 or 3 days, try to make it happen.
That's hunting.
When, and when Samuel spotted it for the first time.
I said, this
I was
is
like,
the one.
Oh.
This is the one. This is the one. I told you, this is the one. Don't even look at it because it's the one.
Yeah, and he disappeared. He bed down on a great spot. We saw it bedded and the same tactic. We left Samuel there with the spotting scope. You and I and Roberto dropped down to try to close the distance, and we messed up big time. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. This was the first morning, right?
I'm confused now. With the
I'm
time.
So confused because
we spent an afternoon. We didn't see anything.
Yeah.
It was the morning after.
Yeah. The morning after.
That we almost got him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the morning after, yeah, he was better in a perfect spot. We got down.
So basically, we circle around. We stalk around the mountain to try to see. Because on the afternoon, we said, like, okay, let's wait on the oak trees, which we thought that it was going to be his favorite spot. And nothing moved. So the next day is like, okay, we're going to do early morning, kind of a stalk around the whole mountain range, the whole knob. I don't know how you call would you define that? Because it's not a mountain.
It's a hill, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know, like a big hill.
Yeah.
We're going to circle around it and try to see if we see it. And once we see it and we confirm that the buck, Manolo's buck was still alive, it's like, okay,
yeah,
we're going to spend the rest of the days here and we're going to close the deal.
So the first stalk we went, we saw him. He was bedded down by that old busted down house thing. I guess probably a sheepfold or something. But anyway, but we made a little bit too much noise probably getting into position. And then the bushes were so high you couldn't get prone to get a shot.
Yeah, when you're hunting an area that you don't know, you kind of see the terrain and you're like, okay, it's not bad. I think we can manage that. But we underestimated how thick those bushes are.
It was really thick.
And I'm always used to having my spotting scope and my tripod, and I love shooting out of the tripod because even if you cannot get into prone position, you can sit down, you can knee down, and you get way more height even with angles. But I left the spotting scope and my tripod with someone. So as soon as we got down there, I'm like, damn, I don't know why I got super pissed off because, like, I don't know why I don't have my equipment. Why he left?
You yelled at him on the phone.
Yeah, we're like, I'm never going to leave you my spotting scope again. You bring your own spotting scope, your own tripod.
I heard puto a lot.
Yeah, I need to have my stuff, you know, because I was like, I felt like I needed, you know. And we messed up.
You took too much confidence. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's true what Pedro is saying, but we saw it dead before shooting it because he was in a very good spot, bedding down. So you took too much confidence, but that is also nice.
Yeah.
No, it was
rifle hunting is easy.
Rifle hunting is easy, right? Yes.
Yeah, we will blame Hunter.
No,
and it's true that this time of the year everything is super dry and we were making way more noise than usual.
Plus, you were very unlucky because when you arrived to the spot, the bushes were very high because just like 10 meters higher, there was a perfect spot.
Yeah,
flat, with a very nice rock.
We tried to get that to that spot later to figure out, and the bushes were like this. So anyway, we could have done better. Yeah. But we
were unlucky, and that's it. We
are not perfect.
Yeah. We spooked him.
But it was good because he gave us a longer story. But so the buck, it's this hill, the buck runs to the other side, and I told Samuel, run to the other side because it's going to go to the oak forest. Like, we're going to be able to spot it because, like, the terrain is not that big.
Yeah.
So Samuel rushed it over there. We are rushing it back for, and soon enough, he's like, I got it.
Yeah.
On top of the hill again.
And old Samuel.
Yeah, we sneak again quickly because in that oak trees, like, forest, it was kind of openish, but also like a buck is very small, so roebucks are very small. So we had a tiny window. I lay down, put the rifle, everything rolling.
I was in position, like rolling on you.
Roberto was on position.
Yep.
280, so 310 yards, kind of like broadside range.
And I didn't see you get excited, and I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, like something felt weird.
Yeah.
Like I didn't hear the puff. I didn't see the buck dropping.
Yeah.
And a 6.5 PRC on these type of animals, it's kind of on the stronger side.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah,
so
both my kill shots, like there was like stuff like blowing out the back.
Yeah, like at least you have to hear the noise or something.
Plus he ran off. He didn't look hurt.
No.
So it was really weird when we looked back at the footage.
Yeah, because we checked the footage on the camera and it's like, it was one of those videos that depending on what you want to see, you see it. And I could convince Hunter that it was a hit and he could convince me that it wasn't a hit. So we were not sure what happened. And it was very important to know what happened because if the buck was wounded, we needed to go inside that forest and do whatever the hell we had to do to find it. But if it was not hit, we had to do the complete the opposite. Don't even touch the area.
Yeah.
Leave it alone. And the buck will be scared, but just like
yeah.
not knowing what happened.
Yeah.
So we went back to the home, put it on the computer, and that's when we saw that something went off. Like when I saw there was kind of a tree covering a little bit the front leg, so I decided to shoot kind of a little more to the, towards the center. And I think I misjudged how the limbs of that tree,
yeah.
because the bullet does like just...
It deflected
somehow. Deflected on, I don't know which limb, but you could see like the bullet was suddenly way low, bounced all yep. the way up. So it did like a very strange...
Yeah, the vapor trail looked like it's going to go perfectly and hit the deer. And then it kind of disappears. There's some movement on the limb. And then you see like a bullet fragment like going straight up over the deer.
Yeah, so very inconvenient. I lost trust of the whole team. He's like, no, Pedro, rifle hunting was easy. He's like, yeah, I know. Like, I fucked up in an hour twice. But it was only twice.
It was good. It was good because sometimes, you know, this is good for Pedro.
Yeah, this no,
goes,
I mean.
This good, you know.
Just to keep him down to, you know.
Normal. Exactly.
On
exactly.
my defense, I'm not going to say that I did not say that, but I did say that... I don't know what I did say that, but
yeah, he did.
But my way was like, it's not easy, but like if you don't rush it, like I don't know.
Yeah, no, we get it. I mean, he spends most of his time chasing animals with a bow that have like never been killed with a bow, so he's used to more of a challenging hunt. I mean, that's fair to say. It's harder to stalk into an animal to 50 yards than it is 200. So, but yeah, you gotta.
But it's still, you need to do. Things right.
It's still gotta be done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. No, we
didn't do it right.
Maybe one day you'll be able to shoot rifles like me, but but then you can teach me how to shoot a bow.
No, but it was true that now we were pissed.
On Pedro's defense, I know that the roe deers are very small. The shot was difficult, but even though that happened, I was very calm that. I knew that we were gonna shoot it at one point because when we hunt together, we hunt like wolves, you know. And I knew that that buck was very territorial. It was very old. Yeah. If he's a younger buck, everything can change.
Yeah.
Because a younger buck, he can move. He can go to another valley. But that one was limping.
Yeah.
It was skinny, super old. He had his place, so I knew he was gonna be there.
And yeah. when Samuel and Pedro bite, they don't.
We are like dogs or like wolves.
Yeah.
We bite, we don't. So
no, I'm the same way. I knew he was going to die at some point. And I was actually, like, actually when Pedro shot him, I was actually secretly hoping he wouldn't so we'd have more time to hunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at the same time, I do think that we were extremely lucky because roebucks, suddenly they don't decide to move. They bed down. They move in a tiny...
Yeah.
in this room and they don't move and you don't see it in days. So the plan was like there was this hill and we are like this afternoon it started raining and perfect weather. Like you have been the luckiest person ever. Like the weather was the most textbook.
It wasn't cold, it wasn't windy, it was raining and stopping. So that's perfect for road.
It's like yeah. the textbook perfect most yeah. perfect afternoon you can hunt.
Yeah.
So we are like
I was saying this to you before, it reminds me a lot of blacktail, Columbia blacktail.
Yeah, I need to do that hunt at yeah. some point.
They love the rain. Anyway.
And the hill, we are like, okay, we are going to split. You are going to control one side of the mountain. Hunter is going to control another one. And me and Roberto, we are going to control another one. Mm-hmm. So we had basically the whole hill control on the three
covered.
Sides.
Yep.
And we were all connected. And it's like, who is going to watch it first? Who is yep. going to spot the buck first?
And I knew that Pedro's place was the best. And that's the reason why. Because
we went up there and checked it out before.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, we went in the morning to check it out. And I knew that one was the best.
Yeah.
That is one of the reasons why I sent him there. But also, I had a feeling that the roebuck was going to go to your place. The only reason I had that feeling is because we shot it in the morning. And I thought maybe the roebuck this afternoon, rather than coming to this valley, to this side of the valley, go is going to go to your side.
Yeah, actually... So, we spooked it, the first stalk on my side. We shot it on his side, and the only side that we didn't was mess untouched. With him was yeah. your side.
Right.
But he was sleeping. He normally bed down in the top.
The top.
So he can go anywhere.
Yeah. And yeah, And as soon as we got to the this, I started glassing. It was not long, and I text you guys like, Manolete is 450 yards out.
I started packing up immediately. I was like, oh, it's about to go down.
and I said, like, it was still like 3 hours left of daylight. And I'm like, let's take it easy. Let's see what it does before rushing and moving and everything. I'm like, let's play it out nicely. And I even told Samuel, he's like, I don't want to move because if I move, the terrain is kind of thick where
As he said before, we never like to lose the eyes on the animal. So I told him, hey, stay there, wait, don't lose the animal. I will come around, I will go to your valley, I will find the spot to shoot it. And then once I have the spot and I see the animal, then you can come. But like that, we don't lose the animal at any moment. So that is why I came around from the other valley to not make any noise.
Yep.
I found the perfect spot, 220 yards, more or less. And then that is when Pedro came there.
And I actually even told you, it's like, I'm not sure if you should come because I was worried.
He told me.
The face was so thick that you may try to go around to don't be seen and you think that you have the bug under control. But imagine a tiny head of a roebuck behind a bush. There's no way you're going to see it. So he can be watching you the whole time. So I like, Samuel, I'm not sure if you should come. And he's like, I'm on my way already. Like, But it's like he knows very well the area.
For sure. Because I like part of me wanted to like run over there to like be with you guys during the thing. But I didn't want to like I said, it was a small area. And I didn't want to be the one to like screw the whole thing up.
But so imagine everything was perfect. But imagine you shoot the animal. You injure the animal and the animal goes towards you.
Yeah.
It goes to your valley.
Yeah.
No.
It's easier. Anything can happen. So it is much better and you reduce the risk of failing by doing this. And at one point before going there, I told Pedro, the bug is at the top or not? Because if the bug is at the top of the mountain, I'm not going to move because he can come to my valley. And he told me, no, the bug is moving towards
slowly
me.
Slowly towards.
Exactly. Yeah. So I say, hey, okay, that's perfect. Okay. So I'm going to move.
And you guys got down, got behind the hill you were on and worked up canyon towards them and then peaked over the top. And you had what, like 300 yards?
No, 200. 80 or something like that, but we didn't move until Samuel was on position there and got eyes on the buck.
Yeah,
way, because like imagine like the buck, I saw him feeding a lot, so I knew that he was gonna bed down. And by the time you lay eyes on it, we're both laying eyes on the buck. He bed down inside a tiny bush, and if I wasn't paying attention where he bed down, I will have appeared on a closer range and we'll start looking at it, like where the buck is.
Yeah.
He might be gone, he might not be gone, but we were 100% sure that it was inside a couple of trees.
And we didn't want to make the same mistake as you made in the morning. That is why we came from behind.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to make any noise. We didn't want the roebuck to see us. So we came from the other side of the mountain.
Yep. All right, so then what happened when you shot him?
Yeah, like we waited. He was not moving, and we were like stressing out. He's like, because it was like a rainy day. It was getting dark way faster. There was like fog on the air, so you could not, like, it was not crispy to see.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're glassing. And like, I don't know even if it's going to come out. And suddenly, like, it's coming out. And I laid on my rifle trying to see if Roberto, I was watching it, Samuel didn't, now Samuel did, Roberto not, now Roberto yes. So we're three guys trying to be on the same animal at the same time while I was trying to see it with not enough light to take a shot.
Yeah.
And after 10 very stressful minutes, finally gave us a tiny window between some...
He's lucky to have a good cameraman because it wasn't easy.
Well, it was
the bug was feeding between some bushes so you could hardly see him. And then we said, we are going to wait on that spot, on a clear spot. He was going to come. He was going to go there. And then quickly Roberto made a really good job.
Yeah, and he just had an opening of like 1 yard or something.
Yeah.
And I actually got set up, was squeezing the trigger. He made like, he was limping. So rather than walking like normal, he would be like making like jumps. And as soon as I was squeezing the trigger, I felt that he was making a jump. I like if he makes one more step, we may lose it because we didn't have more light. Like,
yeah.
And I got him. Not nice. Great spot, but yeah. But we got him.
It was moving. So it wasn't easy.
He was walking, yeah.
It was and it was 200, like, 60 yards or 270 or something like that.
Yeah.
40 meters, yeah.
60, yeah.
And then you called me, then I just ran over there. It was pretty thick, and we looked at the footage and looked like he might need some time, and it was like dark at this point.
Yeah.
So we decided to just
Wolbachs are small, so out. I think like they die like
yeah.
Like I think it was he a was good very hit. In trouble. It was just but back. It's true that the terrain was very dark. We could barely see it. We I don't know, a lot of bushes, like we weren't sure. So we're like, I mean, like we have the whole day tomorrow, so let's better play it safe. We come
because
back
sometimes
tomorrow morning.
If they move, you never find them. You cannot imagine how many rollback. You cannot imagine how many rollback I have lost because of this.
Yeah.
So it's like we shot it. If you don't disturb them, they lay down and they're gonna die.
Yeah.
But if you move them, they can go anywhere.
Yeah.
And
it's always better just to come back in the morning. So
yeah. So we backed out and we this morning we go there and it was dead and it was
spot.
Cool old buck.
Yeah.
Like he's all palmated on one side, real thick, nice bases, and the teeth are like worn down to nothing.
Yeah. So super, in my opinion, the perfect trophy.
What we were looking for.
Yeah, we knew exactly what we're looking after a day of watching it for a bunch of time with the spotter. Like, we were not surprised. Like, we knew exactly what we were shooting.
He got
at.
Super lucky on that deflection shot, man. That was like that buck had some good luck, man. He escaped whatever that was. It took half of his foot. He escaped one Pedro shot.
They can escape once, really lucky once, twice.
No, but they're not that lucky.
But I think like with a team of three guys or four, I mean, like Roberto, it's also a hunter. Yeah. So like the four of us that we know how to hunt, we know what's the goal and working all together for the same goal. Because like you were saying, like, I wish I was there, but in my opinion, you did awesome. Like, because the same as the first day, Samuel decided to don't watch the action and be completely far away, controlling
sometimes
everything.
You have to.
We are working as a team and everyone has their roles. And as it played out, it may seem that it wasn't important, but it could have been completely the opposite.
Sure.
And it could have been super important.
Also for you, it was really good because now you have experience how we hunt as hunting guide. You were part of our team.
Mm-hmm.
You were acting like a hunting guide. So you have been the hunter and you have been the hunting guide too. So you have been helping us, and that's something very nice for you because I think that everywhere you go, you learn something new.
Absolutely, yeah.
And for you, I think this was very good also.
Yeah, and that's the coolest thing about hunting internationally and with like new guys and new friends is, like I said, there's so many different awesome experiences, different species, but at the same time, you know, we're all hunters. So at the end of the day, we share a lot of things in common. And, you know, I joke around, but I respect the crap out of you, Pedro. I've grown to respect Samuel and Roberto a lot, too, for their skill and knowledge of the land. And I have a great time hanging out with you, man. And I learned a lot from you, man. I really, really appreciate you having me out. And like I said, I feel like I was really invited in to see. Like, I just felt like I didn't feel like an outsider, you know? You guys made me feel like part of the team. And I saw what hunting, especially roe deer hunting, really means to you guys and appreciate it, dude.
Thanks a lot for coming. It was a
pleasure.
Thanks
for coming.
And now we need to go hunt the Virginian white owl.
Yeah.
With him or what?
That'd be cool.
I have to go. Yeah. I would love to go.
Yeah.
They are in trouble. I'm not sure if they can see us on a tree stump.
I don't know if we.
Yeah,
I don't know
if you give them a ham and a couple loaves of bread, they might make it.
I don't know if we are gonna hunt the Virginia whitetail. I'm pretty sure we will, but at least we will have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, definitely gotta be the first of more adventures to come. Hopefully.
Yeah. You are welcome anytime. So it was a pleasure.
All right, cool.
Thanks all for
it.
It
was a pleasure for us also, and it was very nice to have a real hunter like you. Not because of your name.
So did I live up
to my name? Not because of your name,
Did I live up to my name?
Yeah.
My son is stoked. I'm hunting with a guy that it's called Hunter. no, how someone can be called Hunter? He's like, yeah, is he really good? He's like, I don't know, it's called Hunter, but it doesn't mean it's good or not.
Yes, I've been wanting to say this. Mi nombre es Cazador.
Cazador.
See you next time.
Anything else I missed, guys?
No. Let's go to Madrid and let's have a great
dinner.
Yeah,
if you want to hunt in Spain and get cracked up by hilarious jokes and look at this handsome dude for a couple days, look up Casa Planeta on Instagram. Where else can people find? Is that the best place?
Website, Instagram.
It's C-A-Z-A space, or no space on Instagram.
Casa, like yeah. Cazador.
C-A-Z-A-P-L-A-N-E-T-A.
That's right, sir.
All right, cool. All right, well, thanks again, guys, and thanks for listening. We'll see you guys on the next one.